New G rating system. The new G rating system is officially active. And I know you're wondering, what is the new G rating system? Well, if you listen, I'll tell you. The new G rating system has nothing to do with movies. Not a rated G movie. The new G rating system is a system that I created. And it gives things that I rate an opportunity to receive 6 out of 6 G's, which is equivalent to 5 stars or a 10 out of 10 rating. The 6 G's represent, number 1, media friendly. If anything that I rate is it's easy on the eyes or has a high production value or just shot well or can be accepted by people easily, and it doesn't look like a couple raccoons recorded it, you know. The second G represents interest. If something that I rate, whether it's a project, whether it's a music project or a film project, whether it's interesting, if it keeps the consumer's interest. The third G represents relatability. What I mean by relatability is if what the product, I guess, intention is, if the consumer can relate to it. What I mean by that is, say for instance, this is a music project, if it's something that's just off the wall that I really don't relate to, you know, chances are they'll probably get a lowercase g or a no g at all. The fourth G represents relevance. What I mean by that is, say something just sounds dated or just something that just isn't really relevant to what's going on right now, or just even relevant to anything that I'm accustomed to. Say for instance, it was like something that really appeals to like a different culture or a different time, and not to say that that project is not a, how should I say, not worthy of being accepted, but it's just something that's just not relevant to me. Like maybe it might be relevant to somebody else, but just not to me at the time. The fourth G represents originality. And that's self-explanatory. If it's something that I've seen before, almost, or something that I've heard before, I'm most likely going to give it a lowercase G if I'm feeling nice that day. But if it's just a complete copy of something, it gets no G at all for that category. And the last category just means if they ripped it. You know? Sometimes something is just so undeniable. You can tell they put all their heart into it. And you're like, they did that. They ripped that. If something looks half-assed or like half-heartedly done, you know, I'm probably gonna give it a lowercase G or no G at all. And with that said, let me use a system to talk about the first project that I'm rating with the system, and that would be a Busta's new album, Extinction Level Event, the 2020, the new one. Should I say part 2? extension level event. My thoughts on it before I even went into it is, I'm an artist. I make content, so I give it time to breathe first. You know, I let everybody get their listens in, let everybody talk about how they felt about it, and then I just listen to it as a fan. And first listen, second listen, third listen, it was banging. And then just for the purpose of people who haven't heard it before or are thinking about listening to it, or you know, just wanted to hear what people had to say about it before they even listened to it, I'm gonna rate it as a, I'm not a critic, but just somebody from the street side that just wants to give their opinion. And first of all, let me get this out of the way. Was it media friendly? Of course. You know, Busta Rhymes, he always delivers quality. All the beats were on point. Everything sounded mixed crazy. Everything banged. There was not one track that I listened to and I was like, oh, they didn't mix that correctly, or God, that sounds crazy. Like, they could at least do the levels up on this, or his voice sounds too loud on this. Everything was mixed perfect. Everything was crisp and everything was clear, and you know, his cadence and everything, you could hear every word he was saying, even though sometimes he went to the patois, or you know, the original rude boy, you know how Busta Rhymes gives it up. He did his thing with that. Interest, I was definitely interested all the way through. No skips on this album. There was not one song that I listened to for 1 minute and was like, let me go to the next song. I just let the whole thing play through. Even though he had tracks on there that I had even heard before, like the M joint, him and M, Calm Down, but I still listened to that because, you know, they went crazy on it, so it's no skips. I stayed totally interested all the way through. And was it relatable? Of course it was relatable. Busta Rhymes, he's from Brooklyn. He has the West Indian background. Everything he was talking about, I could relate to. He has songs about what he's going through in his life. He just had songs when he was rhyming. He had songs that address things that are going on in the world today. And, you know, he always touches on stuff like that. Because he came up in that whole culture, you know, Brooklyn. Everybody's what they call woke today. But back then, everybody was really up on their game. And there's a lot of fire percenters around. And they were all, like, schooling people to, you know, what's going on in the world. And even if you were a little kid, you kind of were advanced. For the average little kid, you kind of always knew what was going on in the world, even from the age of like 12, 13. You probably knew a little bit more than some people from different parts of the country that were like in college or something, because we always stayed well read and we always stayed up on what was going on in the world and things that are going on around us. Relevance. Number four. Busta Rhymes, he never goes out of style. The relevance on this album is definitely capital G, which gives him so far 4 capital G's. It was very relevant, as I said, to what's going on in the world today. He touched on a lot of things that people were, sometimes they tiptoe around, but Busta Rhymes, he always brings you to his world, or if he can't bring you into his world, he'll step into your world and tell you a little bit about what's going on in your world. So he was definitely saying things that were relevant to what's going on, like I say, around us and what's going on today. He definitely didn't say anything that was, I guess, not relevant to the average listener. Like he wasn't going off on tangents and saying like he would do crazy things or saying that's no stab at anybody. But everything that he was saying, you could tell it was probably something that you could relate to, and it was something that that wasn't dated. It was something that you can obviously say, okay, he made this album at least most of his songs this year. And if he didn't make most of his songs this year, he made the majority of them probably in 2019. You could tell he just started recording this album. He didn't start it in 2015. And if he did start it in 2015, it's amazing. So definitely props for on the relevant side of things. Originality, shit, is Busta Rhymes. Of course he was original. Listen to his name, Busta Rhymes. Nobody has a name like that. Everything he was spitting, he didn't sound like anybody. Even when he went into like certain songs where he was picking up the new flow or whatever, he did it the Busta way. Like sometimes you know, you have to adapt to new styles, but you don't have to adapt to the whole new style. You just take a piece of what you like in that new style, what's going on today, like with the melodies and stuff, and you flip it how you do it. And he kind of like flipped that on a couple songs like that. But he did it the Busta way. It was definitely original with the way he did it. You know, I didn't hear any lyrics that I've heard before from anybody. He didn't like buy any lyrics. He didn't buy any styles. He didn't buy any concepts or songs. So everything on his album was original. So that got higher case G. And last G, but not least, is did he rip it? Of course he ripped it. Yeah, he did his motherfucking thing. He definitely, you could tell he definitely put his heart in it. And you could tell he definitely worked hard on it. And it wasn't something that he just went in and said, I'm just going to do this and throw this out for people to listen to. Nah. You could tell he said, okay, I'm going to get all my material, all the things I want to talk about. Then I'm going to be, when I do this album, I'm going to be ready and I'm going to have my heart into it. To that same level of quality that we've been used to since he first came out, and he didn't disappoint. And he pulled no punches. And speaking of punches, did anybody watch the Tyson Roy Jones card with the Jake Paul and the Nate Robinson undercard? I watched it, and I wasn't disappointed in that either. A lot of people were saying that they seemed like they were kind of older. Of course, they were, let's say, like 50 and 60 years old, right? So, of course, it's not going to be the same as, like, a Wilder Fury fight. But for what it was worth, it was exciting. It wasn't a boring fight to me. As we all know, it ended in a draw. But some people have their own opinion. Some people say that Mike should have got that decision. And some people say that just the fact that Roy took all those punches, he seemed very, you know, alive. Like it wasn't phasing him in the ring. But after that, the post-fight interview, he did say Mike Tyson hit hard as hell. So he did say he was getting tagged in there. But he's a great actor, because he definitely looked like he was taking it. He definitely looked like he was just hopping around like nothing was going on. And the fact that neither one of them knocked one another down lets you know that they both came to fight and they both had some defense. So I had Mike, but you know, I wouldn't be mad if somebody said they thought Roy won, because you got to be crazy to fight Mike Tyson. And if you can last, whether it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, or 2 minutes, if you can last 8 rounds with Mike Tyson, I tip my hat to you, because most people don't even last 1 minute. So big up to Roy and big up to Mike for putting up a show. And speaking of knockdown, Jake Paul knocked Nate Robinson down. I'm not gonna clown Nate. It's just he was outclassed. Jake obviously seemed like he had, wouldn't say better training, but it seemed like he had more training than Nate did. Of course, Jake did just have one professional fight under his belt, and he kind of probably learned a lot of things from that first fight. Nate probably came in with a sluggers or brawlers mentality and thought, I'm just gonna get Jake up out of here. But you know, I could tell by Jake's techniques, because I do fight myself, I could tell by Jake's techniques that he definitely had a little bit of edge over Nate. And not to say that if they had a rematch, that Nate wouldn't be able to correct some of his mistakes and get redeemed. But Jake was definitely bigger than him as well, too. So I probably wouldn't even want to rematch him if I was Nate. He should go with somebody that's a little bit more his size. And he should definitely, you know, train for at least maybe like 6 to 8 months before he even steps in the ring, because I think they say his first professional fight, so I think he's gonna start fighting, I guess. But before he even gets back in, he needs to train at least 6 to 8 months. At least I would even go a year before I even stepped into a ring to fight somebody else for my second fight. And it's kind of disappointing, though. I kind of wanted it to, like, go the distance. But you can't be mad at a knockout. He knocked him down, what, 3 times? And that last one was just a doozy. Like, and I could tell, like, the second time, he looked kind of drowsy when he was, like, asking him questions. And I was like, why didn't he just say, let me go sit down? Or, like, he's like, oh, I guess he didn't want to throw in the towel. I guess he didn't want to, like, I guess run from Jake in the ring. But he shouldn't have, like, charged straight forward after being that sleepy. It's like being drunk and fighting somebody that hasn't had a drink at all when you're that sleepy. So he should have just, like, covered his face and just let the minutes go. But nah, I guess he just went for what he knew. And Jake saw the opportunity to put him out. Just let him go to sleep. And that was that. And I'm not saying Hooper shouldn't, like, go into other sports like that, because there's definitely other athletes that played other sports. But if you're gonna box as Shay put it, if you're gonna box, man, this is a sport where people are coming to hurt you. You know, it's not like a sport where you can fight and then it's over, and then some people do hug after, but before, they don't. It's no hugging before. And also another point that Shay made was he had no headgear. They should have at least had headgear, because I know it's exhibition, but you could tell, like, Jacob's coming to take his head off. So they should have at least had some kind of headgear on just for the first fight. You know, it's the first one. Nobody wouldn't have cared if they had on headgear or not. And it's just, I think Jake just saw that chance to just knock a Hooper out. He just knocked him out. Speaking of Jay and Hooping, speaking of Shay and Hooping, I was recently watching an interview with Shay and LaVar Ball. And that interview was highly entertaining. Highly entertaining. I won't give you the cliff notes on that. Just go watch it. Just go watch Club Shay. And he interviews LaVar Ball. And they talk about a lot of stuff. And it was a good interview. One of the most in-depth LaVar Ball interviews I've ever seen. And you really get to know what's going on in his head. And, you know, Shay always asks the right questions. The questions that the streets want to know. He asked all the right questions. And LaVar answered them and delivered. And I remember they were talking about, first of all, they touched on Melo going to Charlotte. And I'm kind of happy he kind of went to Charlotte too. I don't want Melo to go to, like, I know it's selfish. But I don't want him to go to like a Lakers or like a Golden State. I would have loved him in Brooklyn. He would have been dope in Brooklyn, I go front. Just like playing the two. Actually, I would have put Kyrie on the two and let Melo run the point. And they would have just like alternated between those two. And then just had KD on the wing. But I kind of wanted Melo to go to like a place that kind of needed some help. Not saying that Scary Terry is a chopped liver, because him and Scary Terry are probably gonna do some things on there. Terry Rozier. You know they gonna probably do some things down there. Plus they under the MJ too. So I'm not saying MJ probably not gonna be in the practices. He probably not gonna be like shouting from the bench at the game. Well, maybe he is. But I definitely see him giving them that talk, saying like, I brought you here for a reason. I see your potential and I know you could be a lot more than what you are. All you have to do is have the right mentality to win. And I know Jordan knows how to pick athletes. He definitely knows who's nice. So I can see he had his finger on that. They were just talking about Melo going to Charlotte. And he asked him the question about why did he say that Melo was going to only meet, you know, certain kind of chicks or thoughts once he got to the NBA. And LaVar was just like, yo, before that, it's kind of happy. He said before that, it's kind of like good to have like a come up with a high school sweetheart, and you marry a high school sweetheart before you really go into the NBA and really start making your bones. But I don't think Melo really had a chance to do that anyway, because he was born into a family that already had money. So he's probably been meeting thoughts since he was 12 years old, probably 11. You know, you come up, you got money, girls gonna automatically gravitate towards you, especially if you're young. So he's probably had that problem since he was like 12 years old. So now it's probably just gonna be amplified now that he's in the NBA. So, you know, I kind of agree with what LaVar said, because it's gonna be really hard to meet a significant other that's gonna say, I don't care about the TV, I don't care about your father is LaVar Ball, I don't care about your brother being Lonzo, I don't care about you playing for Charlotte, I care about you. It's gonna really be hard for a girl to like forget about all the stuff that's around him and just concentrate on him. And if there is a girl out there, all the girls and all the girls that don't really think about stuff like that, that really care about what he's doing and who his family is, are probably gonna get that girl up out of here, because they're gonna be a lot more vicious than her, and they're gonna probably be a lot more experienced and tactical than the girl that probably will be like the best for him. So it's gonna be really difficult, really, really difficult for him to even be in the same room with a girl that probably just wants him for him. So I agree with that. Not to say that it's not gonna happen, but it's gonna be a slim chance that he'll meet somebody that'll be like, okay, we should get married and I'll sign a prenup and, you know, I love you for you. It's gonna be really hard to do that. Very hard. And Shay also asked LeVar another question, and I'm not gonna give y'all everything because y'all need to go watch it. He asked him if he could change anything, what would he change? And then he's like, yeah, I wouldn't change anything. And he was like, well, why wouldn't you change anything? He was like, think about it. If he didn't get hurt, he played in the NFL for 10 years and he gave his sons everything they always wanted, you know, and he wasn't at their games telling them that they were the best. He wasn't creating brands for them. He wasn't hyping them up because he would be always focusing the energy on him. You probably wouldn't even heard about them dudes playing basketball. And if they was playing basketball, they probably wouldn't have had somebody pushing them as much as he was pushing them. And I thought that was profound. So we probably would have had LeVar, probably would have been like one of the best. But we wouldn't have probably heard about his three sons being one of the best basketball players. They probably wouldn't have won a championship and had the dynasty that they had in high school. It probably wouldn't have been none of that, you know. So I kind of thought about what he said. I kind of thought about my life in general as well. And I think you should do that as well too. Think about like all the things that you think, oh, maybe I should change that. I would have changed that. But think about it. The things that you change, a lot of other things will change with it as well. And maybe something that you really value or something that you really experienced and that you really love probably wouldn't have, you know, entered your life if you changed that one thing that you wanted to change. And I thought that was very profound. And there's a lot of stuff I think about when I was younger that would I change that? No, I wouldn't change it as well either. I've always thought like that way before I heard LeVar said it, but I think sometimes you should go through things or experience things and they, whether good or bad, they kind of give you a different perspective. It kind of helps you find out things earlier than you would have found out before. I went through some events probably like in this year, but I won't talk about them because they're too fresh. So I'll wait to talk about them. I'll probably talk about them in a year or so, Let things die down a little bit. But one of the things that I did go through when I was younger, this is hilarious, when we were younger, and I played football. I was playing football and basketball at the time. And, you know how kids give you nicknames or little nicknames or whatever. I got a nickname when I was younger as well. It wasn't Knickknack. It wasn't Motor Man or anything like that. It was a name because of my parents. When we were younger, we were like, always trying to like do things like to get girls and stuff with the people that I hung around. And then one of the things that we started doing was we started putting I wouldn't say chemicals, but chemicals in our hair to make them look kind of like, make our hair look kind of straighter. Or in some cases, people didn't have curly hair, so they would be putting the chemicals in their hair to make their hair a little bit curlier, look curlier, and look more, I don't know, I guess more appealing to women, I guess. I don't know, I guess that's what we thought. But my hair was already curly, right? And one thing we used to always do when we were younger, we used to always get these things called chemical blowouts. A chemical blowout is you go to like, you have somebody put chemicals in your hair, or you go to like a barbershop, they wash the chemicals in your hair and they blow dry your hair, they pick it out and then they cut the fro perfect and you have like a fresh big fro, like 60s fro, and it just looked, it was like, it's called a chemical blowout, and then once you wash it, your hair curls up and you have this curly or this like this wavy hair that you can play with, that you can mess around with. And then girls loved it. Like I said, my hair was already curly, so I decided to let my, I think I like my cousin give me a chemical blowout when I was younger. But the thing is, like I said, since my hair was already curly, it didn't make my hair curly, it made my hair straight. So if your hair is like kind of coarse, it'll make your hair curly. But if your hair is already curly, it'll make your hair straight. And when I say straight, I mean like straight like lying down, like Vincent Vega straight, like lying on your scalp straight, like you know, like a perm. So or more like Detroit Red, like before he was Malcolm X, or like Red from Five Heartbeats. You know, that kind of like 60s look. So I guess this chemical blowout, thinking I'm gonna be able to like blow dry my hair and pick it up. But instead, when I got the chemical blowout and I like blow dry my hair, it was either like, it looked like the Jim Jones look, or like the Snoop look. It was like laying down on my head. So then I was like, what the fuck, yo? So I'm like, yo, I couldn't pick it up, and I didn't want to cut my hair off because I had a lot of hair. So I was like, I'm not cutting my hair off. So I'm just going to let it grow out. So whenever I would play football and I would have my helmet on, when I take my helmet off, it would look like I had like slick back hair. So all my friends started calling me Teen Wolf. And I thought it was hilarious, because I'm not the type of person that takes stuff to heart. So I was laughing with him. I was like, be quiet. I was like, shut up. I was like, Teen Wolf is ill anyways. So they started calling me Teen Wolf, Teen Wolf. And yeah, like this, it was like music. The music did Teen Wolf. Like dun 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 dun. And they said music and stuff. And I used to be like, whenever I would take my helmet off, they'd be like, look at Teen Wolf over there. So that was another one of my nicknames, Teen Wolf. And I even had to go to school like that. So instead of like wearing it like a girl, or like a perm like a girl, I didn't want to look like a girl in school. So I used to have to like slick it back until it grew out, and try to make it look like, you know, get like an edge up or something and just slick it back. And so my friends used to be like, look at Teen Wolf with his hair slicked back. So I used to be walking around with the hair slicked back here, and they used to be clowning me, calling me Teen Wolf. And the funny thing about it, because we was younger, we was like 11 years, no, we was like younger, maybe like 10 or 11. And the funny thing about it is, in the process of them clowning me, they was trying to clown me in front of like girls and stuff. But the girl that everybody liked, like the prettiest girl in the class, she was like, she liked it. So that's another thing that backfired on them. They was like, yo, we was trying to clown this dude, and the girl that they was really trying to impress, she liked my hair. And she's just like, come over and touch my hair all the time and play in my hair and stuff. I used to be like, that's another thing I wouldn't change, because it let me know, like, certain girls really don't care about, you know, what everybody else cares about. And it kind of exposed a lot of people, and it kind of exposed a lot of, like, people in my class that day. Like, some people would just laugh, some people would, like, try to take the joke far, but I was silly, so I didn't really, you couldn't take the joke too far on me, because I was good at it, too. I was good at clowning, too. So, and then some people was like, I don't care about that. It looks nice to me. And it kind of let me know, like, you know, who was like real cool, who was just being funny, you know, who thought it was like, they would say one thing and just get the laugh and just keep going. Or if it was somebody that was really trying to say something to hurt me, or trying to do stuff to hurt me, which it wasn't hurting me, but I could like use that to gauge, to see if something was really hurting me, would they just keep going, you know, or would they just chill. And I kind of learned that skill at a young age, where when you have something like that happen to you, or when you have an opportunity to see how people really feel, don't stop them, just let them go, Let them jump all the way out the window. Get as much of it as you possibly can. Just don't say anything about it. And I never said anything about it. I never defended it. I never said, why are you talking? Why do you keep talking about it? I just let them go. And just until my hair grew out. And just gave me a better perspective on what's going on around me that the average person didn't have. Like, I knew everybody's kind of like true feelings. And it helped me really like create my relationships and gauge on who I wanted to really be around going forward. And you should always like use opportunities like that to your advantage. Nothing is a disadvantage. So would I change anything? Would I change that? No. Because anything that happens to you is an advantage. Every disadvantage is an advantage. Let me say that again. And use it. Internalize it. Analyze it in your head. And move forward with it. So, somebody asks you if you want to change something, say no. And think about the thing that you wanted to change. And think about how you can learn from it. And think about how you can move a little bit better going forward. And that kind of correlates with my theory on the universe. The universe is never wrong. Like I said, the universe is never wrong. Always trust the universe. It puts things in your path. It puts things in your life to show you things that it can't tell you. It can't speak to you. Some people call it God. Some people call it another spiritual name. Because that's the only way you can really explain it. You can't say this force is just, or some people call it the force. Just like in the George Lucas movies. It's something there that really kind of like guides you and opens your eyes to things. Whether you want to believe it's a religious thing or whether you want to believe it's a spiritual thing or whatever, there is a force. There is a force of nature that really guides you and really teaches you along the way in life, and shows you wouldn't say what you should be doing, or just gives you knowledge that the average person doesn't have, or the average person just hasn't like been able to be exposed to yet. And always follow it. I call it the universe because that's all it is. It's like everything around you. Infinite space, infinite time. It's the universe. Always use it. Never think that it's against you. The world is not against you. If things that are happening and you feel like everything is against me, everything is bad, it's not doing anything against you. It's just trying to teach you something. It's trying to open your eyes to something. You know? Like if you're like, everybody hates me. No. Everybody don't hate you. The universe is just showing you their true nature. You know? If it's somebody that's always getting at you, that's their true nature. Like they could be funny with everybody else, but they can't be funny with you because you see them for what they are. And that's the universe teaching you. Like, you might see somebody being funny with, like, three other people, and then you'd be like, why is this person always getting at me? Why is this person? No. Nobody's against you. The universe has picked you. You're the chosen one. They chose you to show you this. So when you're around people, and they're like, oh, this person is that, you'd be like, you know who that person really is. You know? And use it. Don't be mad at it. Don't want to change it. Use it to go forward and make more, I guess, educated or more healthy decisions going forward. You know?